She chose him from a catalogue of anonymous donors. Sperm donor, 47, Ivy League graduate, athletic build, no genetic red flags. He was the perfect ghost. She never planned to meet him. She never wanted her daughter to know who he was. But someone has been watching her. First, it was toys moved in her backyard. Then, a man standing across the street at school pickup. Always silent, always gone before she could reach him. When she filed a police report, there was no trace, no name, no fingerprints. But then a letter arrived in her mailbox. No return address. Just a short sentence, printed in neat block letters. "You raised our daughter well. I'm ready to come home." He was never supposed to exist beyond the vial. She never knew what he looked like. But he knows everything about her. And now, he's not just watching. He's hunting. And he believes she owes him a family. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Donor Wall. Marissa Jensen had always been methodical, a pediatric nurse, single by choice, emotionally cautious after two toxic relationships, and fiercely independent since her teens. Her decision to become a mother on her own wasn't impulsive. It was calculated. She spent 6 months researching fertility clinics, 3 more narrowing down donor profiles, and when she landed on donor number 47, she felt it. Clarity. Not excitement, not nerves. Just quiet, confident certainty. He had no name. Just numbers. But his profile exuded health, ambition, intelligence. A software engineer. 6'2", green eyes, enjoys hiking and philosophy. It all felt safe, distant, sterile. Exactly how she wanted it. Her daughter Nova was born on a stormy night in February. She was fierce from day one. Bright eyes, endless curiosity. 10 years passed in a blur of school pickups, scraped knees, bedtime stories. Marissa never told Nova about the donor. She always planned to one day, just not yet. But that day might be coming sooner than expected. It started with the drone. Small, silent, and hovering just outside her second-story bedroom window. She didn't hear it. She only noticed it because Nova pointed to the blinking red light. "Mummy, is that a robot?" Marissa dropped the laundry basket and ran to the window. The drone zipped away, almost playfully. She called the police. They said it was probably a teenager messing around. No law broken, nothing to investigate. Then came the fence, or rather the part of it that was sawed off behind the hedge, just enough to slip through. Her dog, Ranger, growled at nothing in the middle of the night. The baby monitor flickered static. Her security system pinged motion in the backyard, but when she checked the cameras, the feed had gone dark. She changed the locks, installed floodlights, bought a baseball bat, and then came the letter. It arrived on Nova's birthday. "You raised our daughter well. I'm ready to come home." She stared at the page for 20 full seconds before her body remembered how to move. Her hands shook. Her mouth went dry. There was no signature, just a donor number, scrawled faintly in the corner. For 47. That was impossible. Donor records were sealed. Identities were protected. Clinics guaranteed anonymity. That was the agreement. That was the law. She called the clinic. Their response chilled her. "We no longer have access to the original donor files. The database was compromised 5 years ago during a breach. We reached out to affected clients at the time. She never got that notice. She had moved, changed emails, changed jobs. The breach had slipped through the cracks, and now someone had slipped through them with her. She took Nova to stay with her sister Emma, 2 towns over. That night, alone in the house, she saw him. She was brushing her teeth when she caught the reflection. Outside the darkened glass of her bedroom window stood a man, still, watching. She spun around, heart hammering. But he was gone. She didn't sleep. The next morning, she filed a restraining order. But against who? She began digging. Every spare hour was spent combing forums, online databases, hacker threads. She used burner accounts. A friend at the hospital gave her access to medical software no nurse should have. She ran facial recognition tools using grainy stills from the doorbell cam. Then she found him. Lucas Trent, donor number 47. Real name. Real face. LinkedIn profile. Dated college photo. Arrest record. That last one nearly broke her. Stalking. Two charges, dismissed. One restraining order, expired. His last known address was 2 hours away in a secluded rural county. Off the grid. She took a deep breath and copied it down, and against every instinct, she went. It was a farmhouse, rotting porch, a flag with no country, empty cans scattered in a ditch. She approached with her phone recording. The door was already open. Inside was a wall of photographs. Nova, at school, at the beach, with her mother. Photos Marissa had never seen before. There was a shrine, candles, a baby doll in a cradle, a worn-out pink hoodie Nova had outgrown last year, one Marissa donated to Goodwill. He had it. She stepped back, knocked over a tin cup, a creak from upstairs. She ran. Back in the car, breathless, she called the police. They swept the house, but Lucas was gone. Vanished. Again, no fingerprints. He was always a step ahead. Back home, her mailbox held another note. Running is pointless. She knows who I am. Chapter 2. His version of family. The letter rattled her, but Nova's words would shatter her. Mummy, I met a man at the park. He said he was my dad. Marissa's heart stopped. Nova continued, oblivious to the storm rising behind her eyes. He told me he picked me. Like from the stars. Marissa knelt down. When was this? What did he look like? Nova scrunched her nose. Big, tall, green eyes, like mine. She didn't know what to say. There were no parenting books for this. She contacted the police again. This time they sent a detective, Detective Harlan, grizzled, skeptical. He listened, took notes, asked her if she'd seen a therapist lately. She didn't appreciate that. She showed him the letters, the footage, the shrine, the pink hoodie. He sighed. Still circumstantial, no direct threat, no crime on record. She snapped. He's grooming my daughter. He stole her childhood. He's rewriting her biology. But all he could offer was, we'll keep an eye out. So she took matters into her own hands. She hired a private investigator, a woman named Rhea, who had once worked in human trafficking cases. Sharp eyes. No bullshit. Within a week, Rhea found movement. Lucas was using burner phones, switching cars, living out of short-term rentals. Always close. Always circling. Then came the fire. Late one. Night. A Molotov cocktail exploded against the side of Marissa's house. Ranger barked. Alarm screamed. She grabbed Nova and bolted. The fire department said it was arson. But again, no prints. No cameras caught it. Her home, memories, Nova's toys, all gone. Lucas left a voicemail the next day. I'm sorry I scared her. I just want my family whole. It was his voice, calm, rational, almost loving. Rhea traced the call to a motel. By the time they arrived, he was gone. But in the room they found a blueprint of a school, Nova's school, and a schedule. Her class transitions, recess times, teacher's name. Rhea looked at Marissa. He's escalating. The school went on lockdown. Marissa pulled Nova out. They moved again, this time under a fake name, coordinated through a survivor network for stalking victims. A new town. A new start. But he found them. Always. At a grocery store, she saw him down the aisle. By the cereal. Holding a box of Cheerios. She left the cart. Grabbed Nova. Ran. When she checked later, store security said the aisle cam was glitching. That night, Nova drew a picture. A family of three. Her, Marissa, and a man with green eyes. He says I'm his star baby. That broke her. She called Rhea. We're done hiding. They laid a trap. Nova's old school posted a false schedule online, saying she would be part of a public performance at the city park. They waited. He came. Wearing a cap, sunglasses, standing behind a tree. Police were ready. Rhea was watching from a bench. He reached into his coat, Guns were drawn, but it wasn't a weapon. It was a necklace, a tiny locket. Inside was a photo of Nova as a baby, ripped from a photo Marissa had on her dresser a decade ago. He whispered, "She's mine too." They arrested him. His trial was swift. Charges: stalking, arson, child endangerment, restraining order violations. But he pled insanity, claimed the fertility contract violated his right to parental identity, that he was driven mad by being erased from his own child's life. His lawyers argued he didn't kill anyone, he just wanted to belong. Marissa sat in court, hollow. He stared at her, calm, loving. The court ruled institutionalization, not prison. He'd be evaluated yearly. He could be out in 5 years. Nova would be 15. And when she asked, years
later, who her father was, Marissa simply said, "He was someone I never wanted you to meet, and someone I'll never stop protecting you from."